This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Live from Seahawks training camp, powered through the Alaska Airlines studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everyone. It's Wyman and Bob live from the VMAC on 710 ESPN Seattle. This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. We got a lot coming your way today. A lot of Seahawks stuff going on today. We got Daryl Taylor, our conversation with him at 3 o'clock. Marquise Blair will join us after practice, hopefully somewhere around 3:30. We got to be flexible with that. Of course, John Clayton. 4 o'clock, John Morosi at 5 o'clock, and Bob Condotta, the Seattle Times, at 5:30. So we've got you covered on everything you could possibly ever want to know about the Seattle Seahawks. Every nook and cranny, we're going to get deep into the minutia, into the granular of the Seahawks team. That's what we're going to do today. Meanwhile, the Mariners wrap up their series against the Tampa Bay Rays, and it ends on a loss, but they did win the series. Took two out of three, so now they head to New York to play the whining Yankees and Ruggie Odor and DJ LeMahieu. Hopefully he's got a new jersey. Mariners broke his other jersey when he was here. So
they broke his jersey.
It's broken. It was broken. That's the only reason you would respond the way that he did. So the broken jersey's been fixed, and we'll see how they do against the Yankees in New York with a four-game series. But today was kind of a rough one. I mean, it was great to watch them take the first two. Before today, they hadn't lost to Tampa Bay this year. I mean, they just kind of have their number. And to go on the road and take the series from them, it's a big statement, especially for Scott Servais, I would say, because of how the series ended with the Houston Astros on the heels of that Graveman trade. Final two games were terrible. They win the first game of the Texas series, then the last two games you lose in spectacular fashion. So To pull it together against the Tampa Bay team, who's in first place, the second-best record in the American League, and do it on their home field in front of tens of people, they still don't draw. You notice that?
Yeah.
There's hardly anybody there.
Well, it's nice outside. I mean, that was kind of like when the Mariners, you know, I remember going to a couple of games when they were in the Kingdom, and it's a beautiful day in Seattle. You're outside. Everybody's at the beach in Tampa Bay, probably. But, yeah, that was really, you know, I mean, I said it going in, maybe they are the kind of team that's going to beat Tampa. They're going to beat, and they took the series anyway. And then, you know, if they can just get a tie here, you know, then you're going, what, 500 on the road trip? I heard Gary Hill talking about that in the postgame show on the roundtable. And, like, if that's the case, like, you would have taken that right away. If somebody said, hey, you're going to go 500 on this road trip, absolutely, you'd take it. Even, you know, unfortunately, it's Texas that you lost to, but pretty amazing, pretty gritty win. I have a question for you, though. Should Kelenic have caught that today?
I don't know what he was seeing. You know, I think Scott Servais said that he lost it in the lights. He didn't look like. Usually, you'll see a guy kind of jerk back, like, "Oh, yeah. I lost it," and that happens, especially in that stadium. He looked like he had a bead on it, and if he saw it the whole time, then absolutely he should have caught it. That was absolutely a play he should have made that crushed him, and it seemed like Gilbert had a hard time getting it together after that. It was not a great day for him. He walked four, didn't have his command. It seemed like his command got a little bit worse after that. You know, it's hard to – I don't know what he was seeing. I know Servais after the game said something along the lines of he got it lost in the lights for a second. So I'll trust him on that. That's a bad building. The, like, pop-ups, the ball blends in with the roof. It's an odd place. It's an odd building.
Well, and I thought Blowers had a good explanation. He said he was kind of halfway in between a dive and thinking that he could just catch it on the run. And so I think there was a little bit of indecision there. But, yeah, that was unfortunate. That was the Rosarena triple that brought in a couple. So, yeah, that was unfortunate. But overall, man, I got to say, Toro, you know, and the way they were talking about it on the broadcast, thinking about all of the things that he's overcome, you know, first of all, his numbers are fantastic. I mean, and everybody I thought, you know, was like, what are they doing with this guy? Going into today's game, he's batting .429 since he's been a Mariner. So, you know, 9 hits, 3 doubles, a couple home runs, 4 RBIs, a couple walks. And not only that, he's doing it in a new clubhouse. You know, he's playing second base, which is a little bit different, I think, from what I understand, he's a little bit more of a third baseman.
Yeah, and he had played one game at second base in his career prior to coming to Seattle. Now he's playing behind Altuve, so, you know.
Yeah, you're not going to get out there.
But you'd think, you know, they give Altuve a night off. Perhaps they'd put him out there. You know, he's not playing 162. But, yeah, so he's done a nice job.
Yeah, and then, you know, like Mike was saying, it's just a little bit different the way the ball comes off the bat, the angle, everything. So, you know, going from third to second, kind of an adjustment. So he's handled that. He hits both sides of the plate. You know, he had a home run yesterday from the left-hand side and then a base hit from the right-hand side. So he's a great kid. You know, I guess he speaks three different languages, and Service was talking about, you know, what a thoughtful, intelligent guy he is.
Great. So and, what, English, Canadian?
Canadian. What was the movie you said that? Do you speak Canadian?
No, you brought it up.
I did?
Yeah.
That must have been somebody else.
Was it one of our guests who brought that up? It wasn't me. I remember laughing at the comment.
Rabel.
You speak Canadian.
Yeah. He said it was from North Dallas 40 or something like that.
Okay.
But, you know, and you just see he's a great kid and everything. But he's also coming into this situation where, you know, it's not his fault, but the whole Graveman thing, you know, he's kind of dealing with that. I'm sure he knows and understands how upset these guys are about Graveman not being here. And then, you know, he's having to deal with all that. And in the meantime, he's killing it.
Yeah.
He's really doing well. You know, I thought today when, you know, he tried to turn a double play that he didn't get to. I think I've seen JP and maybe Dylan Moore, maybe I'm wrong, but they're maybe a little bit quicker turning that. He was a little, I mean, it was a good throw and everything. JP made a great diving stop, tried to turn two, and I don't know, just the transition. It wasn't like slow, but it wasn't like super fast or anything. So, yeah, that's something that he's having to adjust to. So, yeah, amidst all of these things that are going on with him, he's able to have tremendous success and help him win.
Yeah, he's and you brought up, you know, listen, I don't think anybody in that clubhouse, as mad as they were, would treat him poorly, would be mad at him. I mean, these guys,
he would feel it, you know.
Certainly, yeah, he would know that, you know, if he didn't read it, some, you know how it is with friends. Hey, they're saying this is what's being reported, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, he's certainly aware that it wasn't a popular move within the clubhouse. Scott Service in cut number one, just talking about not surprised that the players were upset by the move, but talking about their resiliency.
You know, people look at our clubhouse and, you know, players were upset, you know, with things that happened, you know, last week with the trades. And it didn't surprise me. We have a very close-knit group. It's family. And the guys are, you know, anytime you lose a family member or a guy gets traded, there's always going to be that reaction. But I will say that how this group, and it's been a very resilient group. You know, we've seen it all year long. And like I said, they come back to work the next day, great attitude, getting ready to play and beat an opponent and move forward. That's what you have to do, and that's what we have done.
And the weird thing is we're finding out now they weren't really upset about Graveman. It was more the departure of Montero.
So that's the you got me there, Bob. I was like, wait, I thought Bob didn't like Montero.
No, we're talking about their reaction. I was fine with his departure, but they were written on.
Monty.
I just love that. He was what Houston supposedly really wanted. Was Montero, and I'm just terrified they're going to fix him.
He is.
I am terrified that he's going to just, we're going to see him dominating for them. They're going to be in the playoffs, and they're going to Montero in these high-leverage situations, and he's just mowing them down. You're going to, he's going to be gone, of course.
Who's the shortstop? Is it Chris Taylor that went to the Dodgers?
Yeah.
And he's fantastic here. He always looked kind of clueless.
Looked lost. Looked behind.
He did.
He just looked like he wasn't. Really, he looked like that 4A guy who could play at the minor league level but just wasn't quite good enough to succeed at this level.
You know, it's funny how that happens in the NFL as well, that you've heard people say, like, he just wasn't going to have success here. He had to go somewhere else to get better. And I don't know if it's a fit. Maybe it's something, some confidence that you get, or maybe it's the things that the coach says to you, or, you know, everybody has different kinds of personalities and reacts to different kind of coaching. So, yeah, I mean, you know, that's why you see, I think, just in general, you'll see athletes sometimes do that. I feel like maybe it happens. Maybe we're being myopic, as
El Hombre
explained to
us.
I
like
what
that he defined
meant.
It as soon as he said it, too.
I like that. That was like the least complicated word that he's used, and he explained that one.
It'd be more helpful if he did that more often.
Yeah, but it just something that seems like it happens to you all the time. But yeah, when you look at guys that that leave here, and sometimes they just have to go somewhere else. And I would not be surprised to see Montero. I just remember have success. I mean, because I remember listening to Tom Murphy saying, "Hey man, I'm telling you, this guy has really good stuff." And I'm like, "All right, man, you're a catcher." And but we never saw it.
No,
maybe he got unlucky.
There was a lot of unlucky going on with him here, and maybe it does just come down to, hey, he just wasn't going to find it here for whatever reason. I don't know if he just hear some of these guys, they get a different voice, they get a different approach from a coach on the staff wherever they end up, and it clicks with them. Just wasn't clicking here for him.
One more thing on Toro.
Yeah,
I don't know if he's known as a plus as far as speed. Does he have plus speed? But that barehanded, that was a great barehanded. Wendell, the third baseman, barehanded a grounder. It was a chopper that Toro hit. And, you know, he fielded it perfectly, had a great throw. It was a really good play. Toro beat it. So, yeah, I mean, he's got speed as well. So, I don't know, maybe that's what Houston is thinking right now about Toro. See, we never pay attention to that. You know, if he's not having great success, like you said, I mean, he was behind Altuve, so he's not going to get on the field.
Well, yeah, he wasn't going to get any. I mean, behind Bregman, if they wanted to put him at third. He's not going to take over Correa's spot at short. You're not taking Altuve's spot. So he was as good as he may end up being. We'll find out. I mean, it's a nice little streak. Let's see what he does.
Well, Morosi was telling us, like, Houston is just such a better team than the Mariners. And so
he wasn't going to get on the field
there. This is an example of it. So, but, yeah, I mean, it's been really good. I'm very impressed with this kid. You know, especially hearing all the stuff about him off the field, that, you know, he's just a thoughtful, smart guy.
You like that he speaks Canadian.
Right in. I like that he speaks Canadian. What do you say, a boot?
A boot.
Is that speaking Canadian?
Eh.
So anyway, yeah, that's been a really good thing so far, and hopefully it continues for him.
Does his success, and again, it's brief. I'm not going to sit here and say he's a Hall of Famer or anything, but it's nice to see him come out of the gates hot like that, because I think – It was such an emotional trade. There was so much negativity and blowback behind it. I hated it when it was first announced. Hated it. And a lot of it was, you know, in response to how the team was responding. Like, the more we saw how angry they were, I'm like, man, you brought over this guy who was hitting .211 at the time. He looked like another version of Dylan Moore and Shed Long. He can play multiple positions, but he doesn't really have a position, so to speak. He's hitting .211, you know, kind of a part-time fill-in guy there, and you bring him over. And for that, you upset the clubhouse the way that you did. I hated it. But now that he's gotten off to such a hot start, and hopefully it continues for the other people that were of like mind, and that was the majority. I mean, it wasn't just the team that hated it. It was, I mean, that day was hilarious. I don't know if you remember. The beginning of the day, we were riding that high of the night before, the game they won against the Astros. Mm-hmm. And like every third text we were getting, and you guys can text in 710-710 to the Mac and Jack's text line. Every second, third text was, "You got to extend Jerry now. You got to extend Scott Service now. How have they not done this?" And then that trade gets announced at the end of our show, and I think we had like a half hour left or something. And every text is, "Fire DePoto. Get him out of here." It was just the massive 180, you know, when that trade went down, and the blowback and the anger for the people that felt that way. And I don't blame them. I was right there. I was right there with you. Does this vindicate Jerry in your eyes? If you were one of the people texting in saying, "Get him out of here. Trade him, fire him." Do you feel any differently now that Toro has shown to be a pretty productive player in a brief amount of time? But, I mean, he's done basically everything you could possibly ask of him so far. Does that vindicate him in the minds of those that were really, really angry?
I would say that they would still point out the Saturday night loss to Texas and that Graveman would have locked that down, you know, and Castillo didn't.
And they might be right.
So, you know, I don't know if that's the case. I mean, Had Graveman even given up like a home run or a run or anything like that? I mean, I think he'd given up maybe one. But, yeah, so, I mean, that argument could probably be made. So, by the way, I'm just sitting here watching Daryl Taylor. We got him today at 3 o'clock. And you heard Bobby Wagner the other day talking about how explosive he is. I'm just watching him just rush the edge. And that's really all I would expect from him, a kid out of Tennessee who, you know, missed the entire year last year. But, you know, he looks so explosive and good and fast. So, really, really looks good. And just looking at that D-line group, we're sitting here. This is all we get out here. They're practicing over on the far field, but mostly we get D-line drills.
Yeah, we can't see anything because we're quarantined off with the tent here. So, we can't see the far field. We're seeing the drills in front of us. And that's what I've put in the notes last night, and we can go through it later on in the show, just, you know, kind of who stood out so far in the brief amount of time we've had to see guys. But he was the guy that I had really sort of taken notice of, not because we spoke to him, but, you know, and he's good kid. He was a fun conversation, so that'll come up at 3 o'clock. But, yeah, he really – I don't know what kind of a linebacker he's going to be, how he is in coverage, you know, his skills in that area. But in terms of rushing the passer, he definitely seems to have a different gear there, which is cool to see for somebody who struggled all last year just trying to rehab and trying to get out there. So, anyway, but as far as the Mariners go, yeah, today was a bummer. Gilbert wasn't great. By the way, one other thing that I brought up in our notes last night, you had Gilbert, Kelnick, and Seawald all come up the same day. And Seawald joked about, we interviewed him, and he joked about, all the three of us young guys or whatever he wrote, you know, had a sense of humor about it because all the attention was obviously on Kelnick and Gilbert. Out of the three, and to me it's not even close, the most productive, consistent individual of the three has been Seawald.
Right.
Without question. It goes Seawald, it goes Gilbert, then it goes Kelnick. It's amazing. The guy with no name, no notoriety, no expectation, just, oh, yeah, him too. You know, our two young future stars are being called up, and this other guy. And the other guy has been nails. I mean, he didn't pitch today, but he pitched yesterday. He's got an ERA, I think, just a shade above two at this point. And much like Graveman, you look at his history, this is not who he's been. So I don't know what changed. I don't know if we're just getting him at the right time. But, man, he has been really, really good. And of the three, the most consistent contributor by far, and I don't even think it's close.
Well, and he's 31 years old now. And, you know, that's something. I think when he came up, I'm trying to remember what the date was. I think he was either 30 or just turning 31. That was his debut. And so he was making jokes about how, spring chickens are coming up. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, of those three, he's been solid. It's very interesting to me. You see how it clicks for some guys. And, you know, why didn't he, between age 25 and 30, what happened there?
Maybe it's a different voice, like we were just talking about with Montero or Chris Taylor or whoever. Maybe he just is in a situation now. And I'm hesitant to, you know, go, this is who he is now, because relievers are so, we've talked about it before with the bullpen. It just inexplicably can be phenomenal, and then that same cast can come back the next year and be terrible. No particular reason. You're just like, hey, still got velocity, still got a live arm. I don't know. Guys are hitting them. It's hard to explain, you know, sort of the up and down nature of a bullpen. And that would include somebody like this whose history is much more in another direction than what we're seeing right now.
Well, and if you look at his contribution, I mean, sometimes it's one and a third inning. Sometimes it's a third of an inning. But if you go back to throughout the entire month of July, he's been part of 12 wins and two losses. So I just, you know, he's just hit his mark, and it's really nice to see that. That's one of the things that makes it so interesting, and that this is why I always say, like, I'm giving the benefit of the doubt to Jerry DePoto, because he has been looking at this stuff for a long time, and he sees things. I would like bringing up the Torrens, you know, deal when they brought him up. They saw something. He came up and started hitting. They see things that other people don't and that we don't. So, you know, as far as all the Graveman stuff, I wasn't happy about it in the beginning. But, you know, like the team, I was like, all right, you got to move on from this. And as a fan, and it seems to be working out. So, you know, that's, you know, maybe he saw something in Seawald. Who knows? Who knows what he saw? But it's something that the rest of us aren't seeing.
All right, let's take two.
Well, the NFL Hall of Fame game is tomorrow. Yeah, we already have preseason football tomorrow. Dak Prescott won't play in it, though. Suffered a lat strain back on July 28th and hasn't resumed throwing yet. So the Cowboys are being very cautious in bringing him back because they still get three more preseason games after this Hall of Fame game.
Lat strain? I thought he had a shoulder thing going on or something, but whatever. Yeah, he hasn't been practicing, so crazy that you've got a game tomorrow to pay attention to.
Yeah.
Well, I guess you don't have to pay attention, but just for the NFL diehards who are just aching for anything NFL that's current and new, already tomorrow.
I feel bad for him, though. I mean, I'm hoping that this isn't something. I like Dak Prescott. Always have. Always thought he has been kind of an underrated leader. I think, you know, you hear down in Dallas, talk to some of the beat writers down there last year, that he's the kind of guy that has, like, the team party at his house and everybody over. And, you know, he's got the big football field in his backyard and works out with guys. He's just a glue guy. But he's also a guy kind of like, you know, we talk about quarterbacks around the league that don't get respect, you know, that have good numbers. And I think he's one of them. So hopefully, because that was terrible last year, that broken ankle that he had out on the field, it was ugly.
Yeah, we're still in the 2021 season, but the 2022 MLB schedule is out, and the Mariners announced that their season begins March 31st at home against the Tigers. And how about this for an interleague slate? The AL West is matched up against the NL East, so we can get El Hombre out here in the flesh May 9th through 11th. The Mariners host the Phillies.
Got to get him a sponsor. Get somebody to pick up his flight out here.
What I want you to do is put him in a section, and then I'm going to go into the section and see if I can identify who he is, because I've never seen a picture of El Hombre, and I don't want to. I'm purposely avoiding it because I have in my mind what he looks like.
I'm going to just say you're wrong, and I don't even know what you're picturing.
It's not very flattering. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. What is, are you picturing a tall guy, a short guy, fat guy, a thin guy?
Don't answer. I say short guy, glasses. I he's got kind of a, you know, kind of a sarcastic look on his face.
That wouldn't be the tone of his voice dictating that,
yeah,
right?
No.
Yeah. Well, that'll be cool. I mean, we'll see the Phillies and the Mets and, you know, everybody in the NL East. So already looking to next season when the Mariners are truly supposed to compete, right? That's when the expectation is it's playoffs or bust. So
apparently, yeah, that's how big the Mariners have become, because we're out here at Seahawk practice and we're talking about next year's schedule for the Mariners.
That's right.
I guess they've made it.
Well, we'll talk Seahawks for the next 5.5 hours. We'll give everybody their dose here. Take Two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/cyberknife. Prostate coming up. The Seahawks offense might be going through some growing pains. I'll tell you what we're talking about next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wyman and Bob,
live from Seahawks training camp
on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
We continue live from the VMAC. It's Wyman and Bob. This hour of the show is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Well, we've talked about this offense and what it may look like, you know, new coordinator out here and, you know, things looking a bit different. Yesterday, defense had a couple of interceptions, and it looks like the offense still working their way through things. Cut number four, DK Metcalf, talking about a few missed assignments out there.
We did a lot of studying, and everybody was on the same, you know, page this offseason, trying to learn their position and trying to learn the offense as a whole. So we're still making a few MAs, but we come together as a team in the offense pretty well.
MAs.
What is that?
MAs, missed assignments.
Oh, missed assignments.
It's the first time I heard that one. I was like, wait, what's he saying?
A few MAs there.
Yeah. Well, then I think that's going to be scrutinized, right? I mean, guys make mistakes, whether you're changing an offense or not. But I would say, you know, and especially why this is, you know, bad news for Eskridge, it's hard to stay focused and involved in practice when you're not practicing. You know, and they always say, get your mental reps. But there's nothing that substitutes going out and actually doing it and trying and failing and succeeding. Those things, you know, those are going to happen. But I think that happens no matter what kind of offense you have, whether you've been running it for 4 years or it's a brand new offense. So, but there's going to be more scrutiny. Now, you know, one of the interceptions that happened the other day was a brilliant play by Trey Flowers. He tips the ball away, and I think it was DK who was covering. And then, you know, Quandre Diggs comes and has a one-handed interception that was spectacular.
That's what he does.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, if you get picked off by Quandre Diggs, you're not slumming.
He's the Matrix.
He is in the Matrix. I always say it's not the Matrix. You can't, like, stop time and move your body. Like, was it Nemo? Was that the guy's name that would dodge the bullets?
Yeah,
I mean, but he does. I mean, he plays that way. He's very low to the ground. So, I mean, he gets an interception.
But I think, you know, well, you're going to read about this stuff, and rightfully so. I mean, for guys like Condotta, they're out here, and Bob Condotta's coming on with us later. I mean, they're keeping track of, like, Russell was 6 for 9 for 70 yards in this drill. And so they're watching every single play and just scrutinizing it. And so, of course, you're going to try to, you know, figure out, okay, are they getting this down? So there's a couple of mistakes, but also it's also about other guys making plays. I mean, look, the first play of team last year, was the one that I saw anyway. I don't, maybe it wasn't the very first one, but the very first play, Jamal Adams picked off Russell Wilson and took it the other way. So, yeah, that those kinds of things are going to happen. But, you know, I think
that's because Russell's really not very good, though.
Well, I think it's just going to be on blast, right? I mean, no matter what, you're going to be looking for the mistakes and saying, oh, that's because of the new offensive coordinator. But, you know, a lot of times you make mistakes. That's, you're not going to be perfect. And then also you got 11 guys on the other side of the ball that are trying to do their job, too, and trying to prevent you from getting down the field.
Yeah. Cut number 5, Pete Carroll talking about, you know, any level of concern with Shane not having called plays before is not a concern of his.
For the most part, we get so much work done, and these guys have been doing it their whole life. It doesn't mean that they haven't. And they haven't called stuff in their brain and haven't called stuff in scrimmages and games. Shane's called stuff before at their place, you know, in L.A. and preseason for sure. And so he seems very comfortable with it. But, you know, you still got to get out there and you got to get in all the situations. And he hasn't been able to do that yet. We'll do everything we can to present the opportunities to get that done. But there'll still be some newness. You know, I don't know how he can avoid that.
It's lots of pressure on him. How are you? I mean, if you're him, you're going to have butterflies going into this first preseason game. I feel like I think that's going to be the most pressure probably on anybody, you know, for Russell Wilson or, you know, new players. Certainly rookies will feel a lot of that. But, you know, your first time just controlling the game. And then it'll be interesting to see, you know, how much Pete is going to intervene and help out with the calls and stuff like that. I know a lot of people thought that he was, you know, a little bit too meddling last year, but, you know, they started throwing interceptions. They weren't running the ball like they really wanted to. Pete had that comment about not having to face, I don't want to face cover two anymore because they don't have safeties down the box because we're not able to run the ball. And so, yeah, we'll see how that blend goes with him.
It'll be interesting just to see how, I'm curious how he feels, like, you know, he knows what was said about last year, talking about Waldron, understanding that Pete wasn't happy with the way the games were being called, not running the ball enough, turning it over. I'm sure he comes in with a thought in mind. This is how I visualize the offense running. This is how I want to run it. But at the same time, there's probably an element of him feeling like, well, I've got to appease what Pete wants to see as well. I wonder if it differs much, like if he's like, I wouldn't want to run it as much as Pete does, but he brought me in here. He's giving me a shot. I've got to make this guy happy. If it's up to me and I've got complete autonomy, here's how I do it. I mean, and I'm not saying that's how it is. I'm just wondering if he's feeling like, okay, I need to sort of cater to what Pete is expecting to see that he didn't see last year.
It's a great question. And I mean, I think we'll see it play out over the year. Now, of course, they're not going to, you know, let everybody in on that. There was a couple of things that were obvious, like Pete calling a timeout. And then there was a couple of times that, you know, it seemed like Pete was, you know, directly intervening to the point where, like, people could notice it on the broadcast. So, yeah, we'll see how much of that there is. But, yeah, it's a good question. Like, what if he's, you know, if you're Shane Waldron and, you know, he comes over and, you know, says, hey, we want to run the ball in this situation. And, you know, maybe Russ checks out of it and it's a pass and it vindicates, you know, Shane Waldron. You know, maybe we'll see a little bit of that. I think also if you're maybe Russell, I wonder how he feels about, like, whose side is he going to take? I would think
the one throwing the ball.
Yeah, the one where he throws the ball. Exactly.
Whichever one is calling for the pass, that's where Russell's going to be. But it's just an interesting dynamic because it's a first-time guy. Now, if this is an established guy who's been in the league for years and he's thought of as a, you know, offensive wizard, you know, maybe he comes in feeling like, I was brought in to do what I do. That's why I'm here. Pete will leave me alone. And they don't have that feeling of sort of catering to the coach on some level, whereas Waldron, hey, this guy's giving me my break. This is my shot. I've got to do what I do but make him happy at the same time. It's just a different dynamic with a first-time guy.
I wonder how much Waldron was aware of that he was coming into a situation where that was kind of an issue. as to whether or not Pete is going to entirely let you run the offense, or is he going to be, because we talked about it a lot, and it was brought up in the papers and things like that, you know, so I wonder how aware he was of that. And then I'm sure they had a conversation about it, and I'm sure Pete's had that conversation with everybody. Look, you're the head coach. You know, and what you says go. And by the way, they don't pin the losses on the offensive coordinator very often. It's always on
unless
the head
your name's
coach.
Bevel. Then
well,
you get pinned.
Schottenheimer, I think those first 8 games of last year like vindicated him for forever. Everybody loved him. But yeah, you're right. I mean, Daryl Bevel, I just thought, well, and nobody will ever forgive him for the throw down on the goal line. So, you know, and certainly Pete could have vetoed that one as well.
And so could Tom Cable. They're all on the headsets here in the play call.
Exactly.
You know, so, yeah. Well, and Pete's shown no shyness about meddling or jumping in and saying, no, 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 I want to do this.
Yeah.
But he didn't there.
Well, and also, you know, you've got, you see Andy Dickerson, you can see him from space with that green shirt on. And then also he's got the headband and the big fro, but that's your run game coordinator, whatever that means.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's also going to have some say in it. But, no, I think Pete doesn't come off to me as some kind of dictator on the sidelines. To me, he comes off as a guy that's, hey, let's get a bunch of input. But ultimately, it's up to him. So, I mean, he's had some success, and he wants to run the ball. There's nothing wrong with running the ball. So I don't think it's gonna be anything that's even a problem, and I hope the blend of run-pass just isn't really talked about too much this year.
All right, coming up, there's one guy who might have just pulled ahead in the race for the Seahawks' third wide receiver spot. We'll tell you who we're talking about next with Wyman and Bob, live from the VMAC on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up at the top of the hour, our conversation with Daryl Taylor. So stick around with that. Really cool guy. And now I know what he looks like. We've talked about him briefly here and there because he wasn't on the field, so his name didn't come up a ton, but when we did talk about him, you realize I don't even know what this guy looks like.
It's so nice to be able to see their faces.
Yeah.
I mean, all we saw was his mugshot, right?
Yeah, and there was never any reason to go back and reference it. So I honestly just, if he were standing next to me, I wouldn't have known it was him.
Yeah.
Same with Malik McDowell. I still don't know what he looks like.
I wouldn't know what he looked like either. I'll tell you, Daryl Taylor, I don't want to say I was surprised, but, you know, whenever you get a guy that's that willing to talk and is really engaging and everything, it's always a bonus, you know, as far as doing interviews.
Yeah.
You know, we have a couple times where we get yes and no answers, and that's fine, too. That's fine, too. But it's always, you know, like I said, it's a bonus when you get a guy that is really thoughtful and intelligent. So what was going
on there? Mario Bailey's out here still catching things.
That's right. He's testing his hands. Mario Bailey, who works for the Seahawks now, he's out here. There's these little, what did we determine these are? Like fairies?
Are they dandelions? I don't know if they're traditional dandelions, but there are white things floating through the air everywhere.
Yes.
And he caught one like he had a magical butterfly.
Mario was tracking it down and carefully put it into his hands. Like you said, he's a receiver.
In between his hands, then he just kind of looked at it like it was this living thing. And this is a precious thing I just caught. I'm going to let it be free. But, yeah, so they're floating everywhere. But, yeah, coming up at the top of the hour, our conversation with Daryl Taylor. I'd stay tuned for that one. He was really engaging. He was fun to talk to, and he's looked great out here so far. But as the position battles continue, it seemed like Dwayne Eskridge had a job to lose. You know, considering they took him with their first overall pick this year, and he was, you know, we heard about his speed, his ability, and I'm sure we're going to see it hopefully soon, but he's been hurt. That's unfortunate. Continues a trend for their first overall picks as of late, with Jordan Brooks aside. But DK Metcalf talked about who he's expecting to see a big year from.
I think Freddie's going to step up. You know, I got a chance to work out with him down in San Diego, and he showed, like, you know, a different level of focus. Know that I'm ready to see this year, and just can't wait for y'all to see.
Freddie Swain.
That's pretty interesting because I was reading earlier, I think it was Condotta, had DK Metcalf talking about Alex Collins and how he thinks that he's going to be a monster this year. And I always say, you know, listen to the players. I mean, they're usually the ones unless it's your friend. You know, if he's buddies with Freddie Swain and Alex Collins, okay, yeah, that's a little bit different.
Unless it's Justin Britt saying Puna Ford's going to be a Hall of Famer or something like that.
Yeah, well, they did pay Puna pretty handsomely. I don't know if that's Hall of Fame money, but we'll see about that. But, yeah, sometimes it's a great example you bring up that, you know, sometimes it's, you know, you just pump up the guys that you really like. And, you know, so we'll see. I hadn't thought of Freddie Swain. I mean, look, somebody asked me, and I think this is one of the big question marks that comes out of this camp, you know, and there's several good ones. Like, where do the sacks come from? Who's going to start at strong outside backer? Who, you know, who's going to get the most interceptions, things like that. But certainly the third receiver. By the way, do you count catches or yards when you say who is the number three receiver?
That's a good question. I think I'd probably go catches. It tells me how often they're being targeted. It tells me that probably they're the primary guy over the guy behind him who may have more yards, but this guy's been targeted a whole bunch more.
Right. Well, and if that's the case, then Chris Carson was the third receiver last year.
Yeah.
But, you know, those are also a little bit shorter throws, but yardage, I usually look at it yardage-wise, and that was David Moore last year. So, you know,
David Moore had one more target than Chris Carson.
Yeah. And those are more difficult throws probably to David Moore, more downfield. And, you know,
11-9 average to 7-8 average for Carson. And then Freddie Swain, he played all 16 games, had just 21 targets, 13 catches, 2 touchdowns, an average of 12.2 per catch.
Right.
So he got out there. I mean, it wasn't a primary target, but he was out there, and they trusted him some situations. And I thought he looked pretty good for the most part. I didn't have any issues with how he looked last year and looked like a guy you'd expect to take that next step. And Penny Hart, same thing, not quite as prominent as Swain, but two guys that were there that have some experience. So, yeah, I don't think it's an obvious answer as to who should be the number three receiver. Eskridge, I think, gets sort of that conversation around him just because of where he was picked.
Right. Well, and this the thing, especially with Freddie Swain, he was a sixth rounder, and he was a rookie.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you're contributing as a rookie, he also on a punt rush against Atlanta, I think he recovered a fumble that I think Marquise Blair caused. They were trying to run a fake, I think. And so, yeah, he gets a fumble recovery. He gets a couple of touchdowns, 160 yards, doesn't blow anybody's skirt up. But, hey, he's a rookie, and he got out there. So, you know, and I don't know if maybe DK's just pumping him up, you know, and trying to encourage him and things like that, because he's now a veteran and one of the guys that everybody looks up to. But, you know, I do always say that, you know, if they're saying it, and he said something about Alex Collins as well, you know, who's a running back, but, you know, that you usually listen to the players and they know, because they have a pretty discerning eye. But I'd not put Freddie Swain in there. I mean, when we talk about that, I've been going, okay, Disley, Everett, maybe Chris Carson.
Is it just the third most targeted
yeah, guy?
And it may end up being Everett. I mean, if I'm thinking who's – I'm thinking of just the receivers and who's going to be that guy in the slot. You know, I'm thinking, you know, maybe they move Tyler to the slot and put this guy. But who's going to be that third wide receiver in title on the field? Yeah, I think it's we're talking about the right guys. If we're talking about who's going to get the third most targets behind Lockett and DK, I might say Everett.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's a good choice. I mean, it could be, you know, and that, also you have to take health out of it, right? I mean, if you get, you know, I've been saying Disley, you know, maybe it's, I think Disley is a complete tight end. If you had to pick one of those guys, I might pick Disley just because he can block also, and he's a really good blocker, and they want to run the ball. But I think Disley, to use baseball terms, I think he has plus hands. He's as Pete would say, he's a really good catcher. He can catch the ball. So
that doesn't sound right.
No, it doesn't. But Pete says that every once in a while. I love it. But, yeah, that's an interesting one. Yeah, Freddie Swain, I mean, why not? I really like the kid. I think everybody seems to rally around him and like him. And like I said, he was willing to play on special teams last year. Anytime you can contribute as a rookie, it's a good thing. So maybe it's him, you know. Text it in. What's your choice? You know, that's one of the big questions. This camp, who's going to be the – what's our rule? What's our regulation? It's the number three targeted receiver?
Yeah, I was just going by title of receivers. He would – you know, who would be the third receiver. But if we're just going who's going to get the third most targets behind Lockett and DK,
yeah.
I'm going with Everett.
Yeah.
Who would you go with? Targets.
Well, I like
– any position.
I don't know about targets. I think yardage-wise, it could be Disley. But no, I – yeah, I would probably go with Disley. That'd be my guy.
All right. Well, we'll see how
write
that
it down.
I'm just excited to see Eskridge get on the field. I just want to see what he looks like. How does he look? How does he fit? Is he as quick and fast as we've, you know, he's not a guy I'm going to pretend I watched in college and know everything about him. How does he look at this level with these guys? Anxious to see it.
Well, rookie camp, I can tell you, and it was against a bunch of rookies and everything, but for what it's worth, he can fly.
Yeah. Well, that's good to hear. Hopefully we'll be seeing it soon. All right, coming up, a guy we're excited to see, I think a lot of people excited to see on the field this season, Daryl Taylor is going to join us next year with Wyman and Bob as we continue live from the VMAC on 710 ESPN Seattle.